Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now tell him how I answered the phone.
He answered. What did you say? You just was like Luke Jackson. Is that was the first thing you said?
Yeah, Luke Jackson. I did that for you. I knew you'd be calling, so I did that for you.
No, I liked it. And I mean, yeah, he was rough that first outing, the first weekend or whatever. But yeah, his ERA now 2.25. I know he's not the most reliable option out of the pen. I will admit that, but he's better than most of the stuff the Braves have coming out of the bullpen.
You're better than some of the ones coming out of the Braves bullpen
now. That's probably a fair point.
No, look, I still have a little skepticism about Luke over the 6 months of the season, but I'm shocked. I mean, I'm telling you, the last minor league game I saw at Disney at spring training, he was over to throw an inning. Hit the backstop twice and couldn't find the plate. And I'm like, he's going to be released. He was awful. I mean, he was all over the place. And, I mean, the fastball was there. The velocity was there. I'm like, oh, my God. He basically looked the same as he did in Philadelphia in that first game. And so he's turned it around. And I'm somebody had to. Holy crap. I mean, they were in trouble. And A.J. Minter looked bad again last night. His ERA is now 9. Jacob Webb finally gave up some runs last night, but he's done really well. But I'm thrilled Luke's doing well. I just hope it can continue. And the ones that can keep it up are going to stick and stay in that bullpen. There's no doubt about that. And right now, he's doing the job. So I commend your keen eye on bullpen talent for sure.
Bill, we'll get to the today Braves in just a minute. Ronald Acuna finally hits a home run. A little bit of woes out there in Los Angeles. It's not getting any easier against Arizona. However, before we get to that, I was going to ask you, and I saw you just tweeted a lot of stuff about Austin Riley. My God, Bill, have you seen anybody this hot in a long time?
No,
it's
I
insane
haven't.
Right now.
He's unbelievable, and it's like every night, what is Austin going to do? He plays this morning at 10:30, so I'm going to be paying attention. I can promise you that. But in the last 13 games, Austin Riley hitting .469, 23 hits in 49 at-bats, 10 home runs, including two last night, two more solo home runs, 23 RBI, 6 doubles, 8 walks, which is kind of important, 9 strikeouts, and a 544 OBP.
Okay, let me back up real quick because that's the last 13 games, not the last 2 months, not the first half of the season. That's in the last 2 weeks.
Last 2 weeks, absolutely, yes. He's been unbelievably good, and overall 315 with a 388 OBP, 12 home runs, 32 RBI. So obviously he played 75 games last year. Wow, I just noticed this. All right, he played 75 games last year at Gwinnett. All right, so he started the year at Mississippi, 27 games. He was great there. He had 6 home runs in 27 games. They said, all right, we're going to send him on up to AAA. He got hurt. He had a great start in AAA. He actually, I can't remember what, it was about this time last year. It may have been a little, like maybe a week or two later. But it was sometime in May where he had a 3 home run game in AAA. Everybody was like, oh, wow, look at this. And then, like, they were actually having a conversation. Now, this is before, you got to think about this. This is before Camargo took off at third base, okay? He was starting to play more at third base and doing okay, but he hadn't finished with 19 home runs and 75 RBI, which, by the way, would make you think immediately they ought to go find a new third baseman. But anyway, but Riley had 3 home runs. They started talking about, we may bring this kid up. I think it was June 15th they were talking about bringing him up. They were like, let's give him a few more weeks, and then he got hurt. and he was gone for about, I think, 4 or 5 weeks. And then they decided by the time he got back, you know what, let's just keep him down there. And then, of course, they signed Josh Donaldson, and everything changed. So, but, you know, he's gone back. Anytime you have a player go back to the level they finished at the year before, you want them to go back and prove that they don't belong there. And I think Austin Riley's doing that right now.
Well, another very important thing to note is that the last couple games, or at least recently, they've been like experimenting with him in left field. We think of Austin Riley as a third baseman. Is this strictly because they're deciding we've got to find a place for him right now, and if the outfield's the only way to do it, that's what we're going to do?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and people were asking me about it the other day about him in left field, and I said, well, he's a third baseman. And, you know, I was kind of arguing with some people on Twitter, and they were like, well, Chipper did it. If Klesko did it, anybody can do it. And that I understand that. And I'm like, well, how about Josh Donaldson? Let him go to left field if anybody can do it. But he's the veteran, so he'll get the ability to stay where he's at. And we'll see what Austin does. I mean, look, he's an athletic kid. He just made so much progress. Look, this kid was a pitcher in high school. Most teams did not want him as a hitter. When the Braves drafted him as a hitter and announced him as a third baseman, people sent text messages to some of the Braves scouts laughing at them for taking him as a hitter because they thought he was a pitcher. And Greg Walker and Roy Clark and Brian Bridges, they believed in this kid, and they made him a third baseman. And he's gotten so good defensively at third. I just hate to move him to left, but if that gets him to Atlanta, and especially with Ender Inciarte hitting, 225 with a 283 OBP, that may be the way to get him in Atlanta.
You got me all fired up for Austin Riley now. Thanks a lot, Bill. But
he's a beast. He's really good.
I'm so excited about his future. But talking about the current Braves, I think I'm guilty, Bill, oftentimes, and you've probably picked up on the year or so we've been talking on this show. I can be a bit of a Disney dog sometimes. I will try to always find the positive in things when it comes to the Georgia football program, maybe the Atlanta Braves as well, and especially with the Braves. But right now I'm really starting to hit this realization that this 2019 version of the Braves is probably going to beat the crap out of Miami and other teams like the Reds and little teams like that. But when we walk into a buzzsaw like the Dodgers, we don't seem to have a chance right now.
No. No, I think you're right. And there are a couple of things. Number one, they're 7-12 against teams that have a winning record. And I know it's early, and we'll probably say that again before this segment is over, but still, you have to be a little concerned by that they're not beating winning teams. Now, it's important for them to beat the Miamis of the world, of course, but still, you want them to have a chance. The big thing for me I take away from the last three games in Los Angeles is that they weren't competitive. I mean, it just really were not competitive games at all. And, you know, last year when they lost that game 4 to the Dodgers in Atlanta in the division series and the season was over, I remember thinking when I was driving home, you know, the next time the Braves play the Dodgers, I certainly hope they can be more competitive than they were this week. And I know, obviously, they won the one game in Game 3 with the Acuna Grand Slam. It was a great game. But for the most part, we saw in that series where the Braves were compared to the Dodgers. They just weren't there yet. We hoped with an offseason, particularly with a lot of money off the books, that they would get closer. And they're not. They're just not. I mean, again, early, yes, 3/4 of the season left to go, yes. But right now, I don't think we can say that they have gotten any closer than they were last October.
No,
and that bothers me.
It's at the point where even if the Braves do go on a really good summer run and they find their way into the playoffs as a wild card, all of a sudden you're faced against L.A. For me, it's season over. There's no chance of beating these guys in the playoffs right now.
Mm-mm.
And it's frustrating.
No, and you know, you look at this team and you can't just sit and gripe the whole time. I mean, look, Dansby's done better than we thought. Acuna is Acuna. Markakis can still hit. Freddie's still Freddie. Ozzie's doing great as the leadoff guy. There are a lot of positives offensively. Pitching-wise, I think you have to be more overjoyed at the performances so far of Freed and Soroka but it's unfortunately balanced out by the mediocrity of Gausman, Folti, and Teron. And you can't have that. If you're going to be a championship-caliber team that's going to win 90 or more games, you can't have that. You've got to have more consistency than that. And, of course, the bullpen issues, while it has been better as of late overall, not really in the last couple of nights, but it's been better comparatively, it's still not a strength of this team. And so you get back to, well, why are we sitting here on May 9th even, knowing that they really haven't made up ground from last October against the Dodgers? And you have to look at the front office and ask them.
Speaking with Bill Shanks of the Bill Shanks Show.
Bill, I think talking about a championship team and all, I would say this offense is borderline championship level, but like you said, yep, the pitching struggles. Is it time for us fans to just kind of get out of our minds that this pitching could be fixed this season? Because I feel like the window to sign Kimbrel's closed. I don't know what's going to happen with all that. And like, should I get out of my mind that they'll make a move at the trade deadline to pick up a reliever, even a starter?
No, I don't think we should get that out of our mind. I mean, if I had to bet right now, if you put a gun in my head and said, okay, make a bet on this, I would bet that they will do two things. I think they will sign Craig Kimbrel, okay, and I think they'll trade for Madison Bumgarner.
Hey, I'd love those two
things.
Wow,
that's a hammer for you.
I really believe that. I think, look, Kimbrel's not going to sign until after the draft, right? I mean, it's hell, it's May 9th. He's not going to sign tomorrow. So I doubt it. So I think it looks like the only way any team is going to sign him, unless something happens in the next couple of weeks to drastically change that. But I don't know why it would, because every team in the National League East needs him, and they haven't signed him yet. I think he's going to sign it after the draft. And I just can't imagine it not being the Braves. I can't imagine it. And I still go back to what I've said for more than a year. The guy wants to come back to Atlanta, and that matters. You know, I don't think he wants to go to Philadelphia or Washington. I think he wants to go to Atlanta. And so I'm still holding out hope for that. As far as Bumgarner, look, there was a scout for the Giants at the Braves camp the entire spring, and he even admitted to me, look, I mean, you know why we're here. And we talked about it a little bit. And, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to figure out that if the Giants put Madison Bumgarner on the trade block, and if the Braves are in position to need a starting pitcher to help them for the final couple months of the season, that's a possible match right there. And why would the Giants not want to do two things? Number one, if they're going to trade Madison Bumgarner, trade near his home. And number two, trade with the Braves to get some of their talent, right? So, you know, it's not like I've been told by any means, because you're not ever going to be told, well, by God, we're going to trade for Madison Bumgarner. But I think there's just a lot of things that make you think that if Bumgarner is put on the block, there's a good chance he's coming to Atlanta.
Yeah, that would be incredible. You mentioned the draft as, I guess, a date after Kimbrel would sign. What's significant about the draft where that falls, where we would need to sign him after that?
They would have to give up a second-round draft pick if they signed him before the draft.
Okay.
So they do not want to relinquish that compensation, which is stupid, but the reasoning is, to be honest with you, I think it's an excuse to not pay him as much money this year. The reasoning is that considering the international sanctions they have against them because of the scandal from a year and a half ago, that they can't afford to easily give up a second-round pick because they want to restock their farm system.
Real quick, just if those two things were to happen as you project, Madison Bumgarner, Craig Kimbrel, does that change the conversation we had at the beginning of this segment about the Braves being able to compete with the Dodgers and the, I guess, the Phillies of the world? This season I'm talking about.
Well, here's the dilemma that Alex Anthopoulos is in. I mean, I've been critical of Alex, but I think he is in a real weird spot, okay? He's got people obviously asking the question about the money. Why isn't the money being spent? I think if he spends the money, if he does those two things I talked about, I mean, there's something anybody could say. I mean, we can talk all day long about why he didn't do more over the offseason to prepare for this year. But, you know, doing those two things would go a long way in silencing his critics. But here's the dilemma that Alex Anthopoulos is in. This franchise obviously was in a rebuild, and the results and fruits of that labor are still being felt and still part of the equation. Most teams have kind of an end date for the rebuild. Well, the Braves rebuild is still going on because there are still four position players. I'm not even going to talk about the pitching. It's still obviously a factor and in flux. But there are four position players in the minor leagues who could be looked at as core pieces for this team for the next decade. Austin Riley, who we talked about earlier, two 20-year-olds in AA, Drew Waters and Christian Pache, and William Contreras, the young catching prospect who's in high A and who's off to a very good start as well.
Drew Waters has a sweet swing, by the way.
Drew Waters is 20 years old.
Yeah.
He's leading the Southern League in hitting with a .349 batting average. His balls in play is over 500. I mean, he is off to a fantastic start. He doesn't walk any, so he's kind of a Jeff Francoeur type right now. But he's hitting so well, it doesn't really matter. But when you're 20 years old, you're tearing up the Southern League, and then Christian Pache is, I mean, if Drew Waters wasn't on his team, everybody would be talking even more about Christian Pache.
Right.
So when you've got four guys that could be on their way or knock on the door, you know, it kind of gets in the way because you don't want to not rely on those kids if they could be that talented. And so I think it kind of puts Alex Anthopoulos in a purgatory to where, all right, yeah, you want to get better. You know, I mean, he knows what I was saying earlier, what we were talking about earlier about them not being competitive with the Dodgers is true because he saw it himself. But, man, you also know that you got talent coming where this team could be really good, and therefore you got to still be patient a little bit. So it's not it's a great position for him to inherit because he inherited a heck of a lot of talent. But he's kind of in a little purgatory where he's got to wait on these kids to get ready.
Bill, I know you're not feeling great, but one more thing before I let you go. I know we appreciate your time on here, obviously. I like something you did on social media yesterday, and I think you wrote a story also. You kind of reminded some of the younger guys, the younger fans, that the Braves and Dodgers used to be very bitter division rivals, and a couple of great things you highlighted. I'm 36. I was in third grade in 1991. I very much remember the whole Daryl Strawberry saga and the pennant race of 1991. But what were some of your best memories you highlighted of the Braves and Dodgers back when they used to compete for a division title against one another?
Oh, God, it's amazing the history of these two teams going back to the National League West days, because it was when I was a kid, when I was 12 years old, the Braves won the division in 1982, and the Dodgers were the team they were battling. So, I mean, I hated the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. I wanted the Dodgers to get a flesh-eating disease and die. You know, I hated every one of them. Yeah, and there was a game I mentioned. Then the Braves won 13 in a row to start the year.
Yep.
And then in the summer, they lost 19 out of 21 to fall out of first place. And it was probably three of the worst weeks of my young life at that point. It was awful. They couldn't do anything right. And included in that was a game, and when I mentioned this on Twitter, people remembered exactly what I was talking about, where Jerry Royster was playing second base for the Braves that night, not Glenn Hubbard, and a ball went right through his legs and allowed the Dodgers to win the game. And it's just one of those things you remember. You know, there was a win that I actually went and found the VCR tape of a highlight that I had. Y'all ever heard of a VCR tape?
I had one growing up, yeah.
Okay, just wondering. So I put my phone in front of the TV last night and taped it and put it on Twitter of when Bob Watson in 1983 hit a home run off the Dodgers that was a tremendous win on a Saturday night. There was a big loss where R.J. Reynolds bunted a ball and won a game on a squeeze play in Los Angeles on a Sunday afternoon in 83. There was, of course, the best regular season series in the history of the Atlanta Braves, and Bobby Cox would always say this. The regular season series in September of 1991, mm-hmm. when the Braves and Dodgers were battling it out, and the Dodgers came to town, and that morning in the AJC on the front page was Tommy Lasorda sitting in the visitor's dugout of Atlanta Fulton County Stadium with a shirt on saying, "I love Atlanta." And he was a hated individual in Atlanta, but he did that. That was the best series of the history of the Atlanta Braves. Yep. It was the environment. There will never. I can't even articulate what it was like.
And that was the game that Greg Olson jumped into John Smoltz's arms, right? When they clinched it. That was against the Padres, wasn't it?
No, that was against the Astros. That was against the Astros. That was 2 weeks later, a couple of weeks later.
Okay, thank you.
But this was a series where they were battling for first place, and on the Friday night, the Dodgers won. But there were so many people around that stadium. It was probably 20,000 outside the stadium who didn't get in. And there were people people really were jumping on the bandwagon. And there were tomahawks all over the place. There were people doing Indian dances. Most politically incorrect weekend of your life, thank God. And the Braves lost the first game, won the next two games, and it was just amazing. And so, yeah, there have been a lot of games that have obviously been tied together with these teams, and the Dodgers, unfortunately, have had the number here in the last couple of years, going back to 13 when they won the division series, when Craig Kimbrell had his hands on his hips waiting to be called into the game by Freddy Gonzalez, and watched David Carpenter give up the home run to Uribe, and then, of course, last year. So we need to get back in the game a little bit with them, for sure.
I was very young in 1991, but I remember very much how Atlanta was just on fire with the love for the Braves, that worst of first. That's what got me into baseball, I believe, was that season, and I haven't stopped loving it since. I know you've got to go. One more really quick question. You can keep it very short. Remind me, why did we hate Daryl Strawberry so much in 1991? What did he do or say that set Braves fans on fire?
He was just good. He was. I was down there. I was a student in 1991 at Georgia, and was I would get press passes from the Braves through good old WUOG, and because I was doing a talk show there, WRFC would not even talk to me. By gosh, which was awful. But anyway,
worst mistake of theirs.
Yeah, exactly. It could be all Bill and Logan.
That's
right
what
now.
I'm talking about.
Deej would be nowhere. Where would he be? Anyway. But so I'd get press passes to go over there, and I went and watched him during batting practice, and I've never seen a swing like that before in my life.
Yeah,
never. I mean, he's still one of the most remarkable athletes I ever saw. And he was just so good, and the Dodgers had signed him before that season. They had signed Brett Butler, a former Brave, before mm-hmm. that season, and they were the Dodgers. So there was just a lot of hate that was there, and then you go and add Strawberry, who was just a controversial figure. He'd been in New York, and he was so good. That was a main reason why there was just a lot of hatred there. But you know what? Rivalries are great when there's hatred.
Oh, absolutely.
And That's what makes it good, and I appreciate and want to thank personally Dan Mullen for bringing that back to the Georgia-Florida series.
It does feel a little bit like Saints and Falcons with Bulldogs and Gators right now, doesn't it?
It's getting close, which I love that because I can't stand the Saints, of course. But
I'm with you, man.
Yeah, you want that hatred, and that was what made the Braves-Dodgers so great back in the day because of that division rivalry and the hatred that was there, but also. And let me say this before we end. I mean, back in the day when I was a kid, before you guys were around, I mean, there weren't baseball games on TV all the time. And when the Braves had 27 games every year on the West Coast, a lot of times those games were just special, you know. And like as a young kid, I stayed up and watched those games. My mom allowed me to stay up and watch those games. And when during the summer, me and my buddies would sleep over, you know. We'd be playing ball all night and doing all that and having a good time and playing baseball cards. And we'd stay up to watch the Braves at 10 o'clock. And there's just a lot of memories that people all over the South have, I think, of staying up watching those games, and included in that were, of course, a lot of games that had a lot of great memories.
Bill, if you, we're going to let you go now, but stay tuned if you're listening to us. I'm going to rejoin the next segment with maybe some music that'll get you all nostalgic for those days. I got an idea in my head. So,
okay.
Hey, thanks a lot for your time this morning. I know you're not feeling well. Go do whatever you have to do. Get some vitamin C up in you. Feel better, and enjoy the rest of your day. And maybe we can salvage some wins against the Diamondbacks.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks,
bye-bye.
Bill. We appreciate it, bud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.